Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined, well, in a second, I'm going to be joined by Pete Zayas. And it's a super fun show in this one. We start with a conversation about James Harden and Ben Simmons and just winning in general in the NBA from the impact that is expected a superstar to make and how those guys to this point in their careers have not lived up to those expectations and the situation that they find themselves in right now. Harden demanding out and finding that the market for him isn't as insane as maybe he anticipated. Ben Simmons figuring at this point being 23, 24 years old and now on the trading block for potentially Harden. I think both those guys have probably been pretty taken aback by how all this is playing out, and I think they kind of have themselves to blame for that one. So that's the first segment. Second segment, we focus our attention back to the Lakers, and we pick up on the conversation that I had in yesterday's show about Kyle Kuzma. Pete and I have somewhat different approaches, I think, on this one. So that's an interesting conversation. And in the third segment, seeing as the response to yesterday's hot take of this Lakers team being the best of my lifetime, or this Lakers roster being the best of my lifetime, it's been interesting, the response to it. And I wanted to see if that would extend to Pete, and I'm not going to give anything away. So let's go ahead and throw to the show. All right, we're joined now by Pete Zayas of Laker Film Room, the Laker Film Room podcast, the Lakers, the Laker Film Room YouTube channel. Why are you doing this? Zillow.
We've been doing this for no.
Well, to be completely honest, David has been telling me that I have to talk about our credentials a little bit more often. I had to get to all of your credentials, and you have a lengthy credential list. I'm of the Locked On Lakers podcast.
I too am of the Locked On Lakers podcast.
That too. There you go.
Yeah.
Today's show, we are going to jump around a little bit. It's been a while since we've had a show like that. I want to talk about the rumor that James Harden or that Ben Simmons is now being included in some of these trades, potentially for James Harden. I want to talk about stuff I've seen from Kyle Kuzma to see if Pete, if you've been seeing some of that same stuff, and then if we have time as well, I want to get your thoughts on yesterday's final segment, in which I said I think this is the best Lakers roster of my lifetime. Not best team. It's way too early to say best team. Those are two very different things, right? The best team has something to do with like their actual accomplishments and all that. But I'm interested in where we're there or where you're at on that one. Let's start though with the James Harden, Ben Simmons, the latest on that. Some reports kind of floating around that yes, that Philly, Daryl Morey is loosening on his stance on whether or not he's going to include Ben Simmons in that deal. My question, Pete, is would you?
If I'm Philly?
Yeah, or like if you had, even if you're Philly specifically, which, you know, I think that there's a little bit more inclination to do that because we're now in what, year three or four of the Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid pairing. And the results to this point haven't been ideal. So I think that makes that decision a little bit easier. But if you were any team with a player of Ben Simmons' talent level, his age, what he can, you know, his potential upside as well, would you include that player for James Harden?
Well, in this particular instance, just talking about Simmons, not outside mm-hmm. of other prospects or people, players his caliber, I would do that deal if I'm Philly and Houston, right? Like, I don't think there's going to be a Houston, better player no available. Yeah, right. Yeah. But if I'm Philly, I would, because my primary concern, and this was the case last year as well before the season, and it came to fruition as the season went on, is they don't have anybody they can give the ball to get a bucket in mm-hmm. playoff settings. And I strain to think who's the last player that was like a top two guy on a title team that didn't have a jump shot as their a threat in their game. And with Simmons, that describes him. And so he's a wonderfully versatile player, phenomenal defender, great passer. He moves like he's like 6 inches shorter than he is.
Is it Shaq? Really fluid. I think it's Shaq.
Yeah.
Just it would be player.
Probably Shaq 2006. Yeah. Or Duncan, right? Duncan yeah. in 2007 would probably be it. But like, but Powell had a jumper, obviously Dirk. You had the Heatles, the guards there, then the Spurs teams, then Golden State, right? You have to go back to an entirely different era of the NBA.
Yeah.
Right? To find a guy. So as fantastic as Simmons is, he's entering the fifth year of his career.
He's still technically a rookie. I'd have to check with NBA.com.
But so, yeah, he's entering his fifth year, and he doesn't like. He'll occasionally make a jumper, but it is not a.
It's go-to. A cause for celebration when he does it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's an event when he does that. And this far in, like as flawed as Harden is, and I think that Harden's game gets exposed a bit in the playoffs as well. He is a guy that you can give the ball to that can get you a bucket from the perimeter, and I think that opens things up from Embiid on the inside as well. Yeah, if I'm in their position, I do that. Would you do that, Dill?
Man, I don't know. I think I eventually pull the trigger, but I want everybody involved to know that I really slaved over this decision. You know, like I think. So it's funny with both players. Both players, as they currently exist, cannot win you a championship as the best or second best player on the roster. I feel strongly about.
Oh, you don't think players. Harden can be the second best guy?
No, because even if he's second best guy and he refuses to participate in any play that he isn't involved in, you know, then sure. he may as well be your fifth best guy. It doesn't matter. He's just not going to. Now that said, I think it's easier for Harden to make adjustments to his game to become, you know, the type of player than like Ben Simmons. It's always funny. We say far more often about shooting that, oh yeah, if so-and-so just develops a jumper, then they're going to be an incredible player, right? We never really say the same thing about athleticism. I think both things are just as difficult to add to your game. Like I just think you could try to learn a shot, but as we've seen with Simmons, if you refuse to even think about doing that, then it's just something that he's never going to add to his game. And yeah, I think they're both hugely flawed players, and both guys, whenever they arrive at their next destinations, are probably really going to have to look at themselves in the mirror and rethink their approach to being professionals. Simmons is in his fourth year playing fifth year overall.
Right. Yeah. So for one, we've seen enough guys add jumpers to their game. It's just that they weren't starting quite from where Ben Simmons is.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
This is like asking Luke Walton to develop a 46 inch vert.
You think it's a lost cause and hopeless for, I generally agree.
I want to go ahead. Go ahead.
And I know that's, yeah, no problem. I know that's reductive. It's a fairly simple thing. It's just, it's very important in the playoffs. We just went on a championship run, and having guys that can get their own shot is just a huge part of the playoffs. And especially the deeper that you get, and Simmons not having a go-to move, a pull-up jumper. And I'm not saying, I kind of see it similar. You know how you were talking about how with Giannis kind of skipped steps out to, and then just went straight out to the three-point line. I think it's a similar thing with Simmons, is that if Simmons, with his great ball handling ability and all the pressure he puts on the rim, if he could pull up from 15 feet and just knock down an elbow jumper while a defender's rocked back on his heels because they're worried about his size and ball handling and all that, and just make an open 15-footer on a regular basis, that's I'd have a different opinion, right? But yeah, it's just he's so far away from that.
Yeah, I think there's some middle ground between where Simmons is and Embiid jumping immediately to the 3-point line. He shot 7 3-pointers last year. Mm-hmm. 7. His rookie season, he shot 11. Now, he didn't make any of them. And second season, he shot 6, didn't make any of those. Last year, went 2 of 7 on the season.
Is there another primary ball handler in the league that fits that description anymore?
No, not since Rondo is shooting 3-pointers.
That's what I'm saying. Is there used to be point guards that like they'd never take that shot, just all distribution and all that. But I think Simmons is the last guy that just does not shoot threes, but is your guy that you give the ball to but still won't ever shoot those.
Yeah, he's got a great floater game. He's got great touch around the rim. You know, he's closer to an in-between game, I think, than no, he's not, because Giannis will occasionally shoot like a 9-footer or a 10-footer. So both those guys, it's kind of funny. You always see people on Twitter looking for the analytical bugaboo, right? Reasons to hate analytics, how analytics are ruining the game. And they always find like the worst examples. I think they found, I forget which big it was. They were running down the middle of the court and they had a dunk right in front of them. And I think it was like biomechanics. One of those, that guy was like, oh, see, this is the problem with scouting just for 3-pointers. It's like, actually the dunk is a very good analytical.
Yeah. Shot. Analytics like those a lot. Yes.
Wide open dunks. That was just a poor read by that player. Now where I do think analytics might be hurting the game is with guys like Giannis, with guys like Simmons, where they have been told the only places you can be analytically efficient is by shooting 3-pointers or by dunking, and that those mid-range jumpers, it's going to take time. But with all of these guys are going to be around the league for 13, 15 longer than that. Over the course of your career, if you just get, you know, incrementally better, and then in year 7 or 8, can have that go-to move in the mid-range that we all know is something that all of these players really take advantage of. The best players take advantage of the postseason. You are making yourself an analytically inclined player. It's just a longer process than people think. They think it should happen in over the course of one season. It doesn't work like that.
I feel like the application of a lot of the principles of analytics have strayed from, like, this doesn't make sense in an applicable way. This is what I mean, is we both agree, like, if you got Giannis or Ben Simmons on your team, you want them attacking the basket, yes? So what do they do against Giannis? And this is true of Simmons as well in the playoff series. They build a wall, right? Like, that is what everybody looks to do. And because they're so good at attacking the basket, you need to send more help. There's passing situations that come out of that. But regardless, you want those guys to be attacking the rim no matter what. If a team is attacking the rim and they're like, oh, crap. And so Giannis or Ben Simmons, they're in the middle of their drive. Drive into the rack. Playoff team, everybody's locked in because it's a playoff series. Help defenders collapse and they form that wall. I'm talking in that moment. Giannis or Ben Simmons can't transport out to the 3-point line instantaneously.
Yeah.
The shot they do have is because everybody's back on their heels worried, oh shit, these guys are about to dunk on us if we don't do this. What's the shot that's open? It's like 8 feet away from the hoop. We're seeing this with THT all the time too. And there are times where he drives all the way into it and there are times he takes that little floater, right? Mm-hmm. And that floater, that 8-foot shot is an important shot. And no, that might not be the target of most possessions. But the reason is because there's nowhere on the court when you're 8 feet away, when you're really open. And that's really the key to good offensive basketball is not necessarily the getting dunks and threes, although that's great. It's getting open shots. And ideally it's open dunks, open threes, but give me an 8-footer or a 10-footer with nobody around you for an NBA player, give me that all day. And those are the shots that are open for guys like Giannis and Simmons that just mastered that because, like I said, they can't transport out to the 3-point line. Mm-hmm. That is the direct result of the pressure they put on the rim is they, unlike almost anybody else in the league, can create this open mid-range shot that ain't that far away. Mm-hmm. And they're alone. And so it's like, if you can hit that shot, it's the perfect counter to the thing that you do great.
It's like the shift in baseball, right? Where Bellinger comes up and there are four infielders either slightly on the left side of second base or over all the way over to the first base side of second base. And you sit watching that game and you're like, man, could you just slap it down occasionally over there, you know? And on one hand you say, well, that's the shift doing its job, right? Where you're turning one of the foremost power hitters into a slap hitter. But he's also athletic enough to where he can be productive on the base paths as well. And if you do that, if you slap it over there enough, you force that shift to you know, normalize a little bit. And now you have more room on the side of the field that you're trying to hit it to anyway, more often than not. And that's all this is. Like, sports basically can be melted down into punch, counterpunch, punch, counterpunch, counterpunch, 100%. Counterpunch. And like, that's all we're talking about with Giannis, with Simmons, is, all right, we know what your punch looks like. Defense has their guard up waiting for that punch. You got to find something else. You got to find another avenue to either the side of their head or, you know, some kind of a body shot to lower those hands so that you can now get back to throwing that haymaker. And, you know, where we're at with Simmons, he's super young. That's why, man, I still say you make the trade. I still say, you know, if you're Philly, you make the trade. But if Simmons does develop that in-between game, which then expands out, you're treating potentially, you know, the future of the kind of player that wins you championships, perennial contending at the very least, for potentially 2 years of James Harden. You know, that would make me really, really nervous. That would make me, I would, it's the kind of thing we were talking about the other night when we were talking about this entire situation all over again, is if I'm trading for Harden, I want to pick his brain. I want to see where he's at. Will he adapt and evolve to become the kind of player who can more consistently win championships, right? And by consistently, we mean at all.
Sure.
And then, you know, will you stick around? What is your career looking like 2 years from now? Because we are giving up potentially a 23-year-old superstar potentially. And if we're doing this, and if he does, you know, take this as that wake up call. Now, I thought the wake up call was coming for Puig, and I was terrified when the Dodgers traded Puig that this was going to be the thing that woke him up. He's now no longer in the major leagues. So it doesn't always work that way. But if Simmons does take this, if he does take being in trading rumors and then eventually being traded as that kind of impetus to really rethink the way he's been approaching basketball to this point, then it's a pretty good chance you're going to look like an idiot on this one. I think you make the deal, but it's not a slam dunk trade for Philly. It's an absolute grand slam trade if you're Houston. If I can get Ben Simmons back for James Harden, given how everything has gone to this point, I think I'm walking away from that feeling pretty good about myself.
Yeah, from Houston's perspective, that's about, you know, best you can do in a trade like this. You never get equal value back for a superstar. I would say, like, Harden is a tier below a superstar for as dominant of a scorer as he is. Yeah. I think that superstars can, you know, kind of carry things for you in the playoffs. Let me ask you one more thing on Harden. There's some rumors with Miami, right? Mm-hmm. To me, Jimmy Butler is a guy that can be a number one on a title team. We saw him in the finals. That's a bad dude. Mm-hmm. Provided that Harden does not follow the I'm going to stand over to the side and not have any interest at all. Let's say Harden understands that he's not playing for Mike D'Antoni anymore. It's a different system, that he's going to a place with the established culture and all of that, and decides to play normal basketball. Do you do it?
Kind of depends on what I'm giving up, right? So
Bam.
I'm sure they're asking for something centered around Hero because they aren't going to get Bam. So if you can, I think Miami is one of those situations where the culture is going to dictate to Harden, no, this, you weren't in Houston anymore. You know, this isn't how it was going to be forever. And frankly, Harden getting traded in his prime, basically, as a perennial MVP candidate, this to me should, if he's at all mature, if he has any maturity in him whatsoever, this should be the moment that he says, yep, that was a failure in Houston. I failed in Houston because I asked for this culture. I asked for to be able to stand up there at half court. I asked to be one of the, he's improved defensively, but I asked to be able to be one of the worst defenders in the NBA. You know, I asked for all of these things. I asked for various teammates. They acquiesced to all of those demands, and we still fell on our face. So him getting traded has to, like, if he and somebody around him has to tell him, James, that didn't work, man. You got to rethink the way that you're going about your professionalism.
So you want wake up calls for everybody.
I do. Well, because you obviously, like, Simmons obviously can't play the way, the only person who wouldn't need the wake up call is probably Hero, right? Because he's this rookie who is now the centerpiece of a trade for an MVP candidate.
Like, yeah, from Houston's perspective, I'm more like, why does Houston do that deal?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. So the only person there that comes out looking like roses is Hero. Like, he's just like, they're trading me for who?
Exactly.
All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I want to talk to Pete about Kyle Kuzma's preseason thus far. It's been pretty impressive. It's fallen under the radar because THT has been on God mode this whole time. But I want to see if Pete has been watching Kuzma the same way that I have. Today's show is brought to you in part by Built Go. Look, the NBA season is upon us, and in the Irwin household, that means I am standing up for games that are starting at 9:30 my time, which means my daughter is waking up about 6 hours after that game is over, or after my coverage of that game is over. And I'm just telling you right now, there are times during that day where I'm staring directly at a wall while my daughter is running around in circles with energy that I just will never, ever have ever again. Unless I take a Built Go pack. And right now, you can head on over to builtgo.com and use the promo code LOCKED, and you're going to get 20% off your next order. One more time, that is builtgo.com. Use promo code LOCKED to save 20% off your next order of these incredible little ounce and a half packs that are just packed with a little bit of caffeine, some natural stimulants, some things that are going to allow that pick me up to just kind of gently let you down and not crash like you do with some other energy supplements. These things are incredible. I would not have been able to get to this point of the year without a little bit of help every so often. And that's how I look at the Built Go pack. So one more time, head on over to builtgo.com, use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. One more time, LOCKED at builtgo.com to save 20%. Builtgo.com, let's go. If you guys can hear it, but Avery is evidently really upset at the Tyler Hero jokes. she says, yeah, she doesn't want Hero traded. Honestly, I'm all the way here for Hero ball, just always. All right, so I, in yesterday's show with Sabrina on Silver Screen and Roll, and then again on this show, kind of sang Kyle Kuzma's praises for the preseason that he's had thus far. This is coming on the heels, and actually this is all still going on while they're talking about an extension and his role in the organization moving forward and all of that. Pete, you can't touch that, but I'm interested in whether you would agree with me in being high on Kuz heading into this season.
He's improved in certain aspects of the game. He had an interesting quote after yesterday's game where he said that he met with Vogel in the exit interviews, and Vogel told him that he wanted him to shoot on the move more. Mm-hmm. That means off screens, off relocations and all that. And we've seen that his footwork has been great. And he's really shot well. I've seen enough times with him, with his shooting, So I think his jump shooting is key. To mm-hmm. answer your question, like, I don't trust that this isn't just another hot streak that's going to go away as a jump shooter. But if he can be a 35, 36% three-point shooter, especially if he's shooting on the move, which he's got, I think he's got more talent for than most guys do. There's less of a discrepancy with him in terms of his feet set versus his feet being on the move. And so if he can do that, that's a different player because he's making really nice passing reads, like attacking closeouts, making that decision at the free throw line, swinging the ball. Like, yeah, his passing has been wonderful. It seems to me he's been working on his turnaround jumper. We've seen a few of those in out of the post. And
so clean, so, too. The footwork on those has been clean.
So, absolutely. And so I think he will be a better player than he was last year. And I think he was an underrated player last year because he shifted more toward the defensive end. But how much will depend on his jumper?
Yeah, so to be absolutely clear, the me saying I'm high on Kuzma is more of a relative scale, right? Like I'm not saying that if he was a stock, I would go out and put all of my money on this stock.
I hear you.
You know, it's more of a, hey, that's pretty low for that stock. I might, you know, here's a couple $100. Just see what that looks like in a couple weeks and see where we're at. That's kind of where I stand on him right now. I was really impressed by the defense he played on Devin Booker. I've been really impressed by, like you're saying, the passing. And also, like for Kuzma, If this situation isn't the one where he shows out, he's just not going to show out. He is surrounded by the best team in the NBA, a team chock full of the kind of facilitators that makes him a better player, right? Marc Gasol and Kyle Kuzma as a pairing, I hope we get to see enough of it this year because unless Kuzma is starting, I don't really know how their shifts are going to align. But you know, just in general, And by the way, he's in a contract year, which for most of these guys means they're probably going to be playing some of their best basketball. And so I'm looking at this and I'm saying, if this isn't the year, and he's not young anymore, he's not somebody that you can say, man, in like 3-4 years from now, man, just imagine what he could be. Nope, he's at that point where he has to really start producing as the player that he is, and with all of that going on, I'm saying, yeah, I could see him having a better year than people are anticipating. I know. For example, Silver Screen on the show that they, I think that Harrison and I recorded on Monday, the tweet for it was THT needs to get minutes and where is it going to come from? And the overwhelming response to it was Kuzma. And I found that as interesting. For one thing, because they're such different players and the needs that one guy fills over the other are so different. That I don't really see how that math is checking out, but also that's the fan base or what little exposure we're getting of it in terms of the people who follow Silver Screen and Roll. That's the fan base kind of saying, yeah, we've watched this TV show, not really ready for season 4 or season 5 of this TV show. And, you know, on one hand, I can't quite blame them, but on the other, it's like, I mean, he seems talented enough to make this work. And if he's going to make it work, this is the season that you would think could elevate him to the stature he believes he belongs on.
See, I feel like he's someone, and through his social media presence, especially, that enough people are annoyed at how he carries himself.
Yeah.
That
probably doesn't.
Sometimes you choose to see the worst in people because you don't like them. Right. And Kyle Kuzma went from being an unplayably bad defender the first two seasons to he was an effective defender all the way up until about the Western Conference Finals. And that's when the level of basketball kind of exceeded his level of defense and he was making closeout mistakes. But that's a big leap going from the defender that he was to the defender that he has become. He got a lot better at basketball and he's, with the passes that he's making, he's consistently decisive in this preseason. It looks like he's taken a step forward in terms of knowing what he's doing in that respect. Because a lot of times, like, it would be decision-making stuff from Kuz, which is not uncommon for younger players. But you're right. He's not a – I don't view him as a young guy anymore, right? He's entering his prime. I just think that he's improved quite a bit as an overall complete basketball player. And that if he was on some non-playoff team and had the opportunity to get the touches and all of that, he'd be putting up 20 a game right now somewhere. He was like an 18-point scorer the year before, right? The year before we made the playoffs. And if he was, and it was like him, B.I., and LeBron, right? So it wasn't like they were, B.I. and Kuz were like kind of 2A and 2B. But like Kuz can score, and now he's got some value as a defender. He's improving as a passer, right? You said like where do minutes come from at THT? If Kuz can become a really good defender, you can make an argument for him over Wes Matthews.
Probably.
He certainly provides more on the offensive end. And if he's able to be a big wing that, like you said, you were impressed with his defense on Devin Booker. Devin Booker is like one of the best scorers in the NBA, man. And
especially so in Kuz,
right. And Kuz's defense won't be perfect against everybody, but I would argue that him and Matthews are kind of complementary wing defenders in that Matthews is kind of a brick, right? He's this like really sturdy guy, but he's short. And so if a guy's torching Matthews over the top, Kuz might be able to bother him with his length. But if a guy's physically punishing Kuz and going through his chest, that he won't do that to Wes Matthews, right? Anyway, that's just a long-winded way of saying that, like, I don't know, man. I think Kuz, people see the worst in Kuz because they find him to be annoying on social media. And I just don't agree that he's like this kind of broken, like, this is your year, you got to play well because you played like crap the other year. I just don't necessarily agree with the premise.
Well, when I say this is your year, this has to be, he's in the contract year.
Sure.
The Lakers have to make a decision on him. The other thing, too, that I'll say in support of Kuzma is like one of the things that kind of drives me insane with him is that he'll have stretches where he's shooting the ball really well, and then he'll change his shot, you know, and then he'll, it's kind of like a, so golf is weird in this way where I hadn't played golf basically since we moved. Moving was, you know, it's pretty difficult to prioritize golfing when you're moving across the country. I had some health and physical things that made it difficult to swing a club. And then you had the pandemic hit and golfing just, again, just isn't the kind of thing that I was really looking to do. So finally I was able to go out and swing a golf club in what has been basically a year. And my swing felt great. It was the weirdest thing. And what's funny about golf is that the more that you do it, the more you tinker. I'm hooking the ball just a little bit. See if I want to try for a fade on this shot. So you tinker with your grip and then your timing on when you're turning over your wrist and all of these things. And you get in your own head and all of a sudden you need to take some time off just to let your body reset and get back to your more natural swing. And Kuzma is like that golfer. He's like perpetually in that tinker stage that golfers find themselves in. And to me, if you're tinkering that much with your shot, if you're trying to continually get better, that's something that you're doing because you care about it, right? Like no golfer keeps tinkering with their swing just because, you know, for the shit of it. It's because I want to shave off an extra stroke here and a couple strokes over here. And Kuzma, you know, for all of his flaws, I think he does legitimately care. And, you know, given where this very show started, right? We're talking about James Harden. We're talking about Ben Simmons. Like, I like the fact that this guy is willing to tinker and try to do some things differently to make himself a better player overall and has really improved noticeably and tangibly in some very important ways. So yeah, if anybody is selling their Kuzma stock, sell it to me. It's probably at a super low price anyway. And you know, we might be having a Bitcoin moment. I think right now it's at like 23K, something bananas. Anywho, let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we will segue over to the Lakers roster and how I feel about it compared to the other teams that we've been able to see and do that here in a bit. I know you feel like comparison is a thief of joy. So this is like the least, like the furthest thing away from the kind of segment you would enjoy doing. But just humor me on this one, because I've said it on the last few shows. Basically, I headed into this preseason looking for problems with the Lakers, right? Looking for cold water to throw on top of my face and lower my expectations to a place where I'm not so brazenly open to getting hurt. And I haven't really found much thus far in this preseason. And as a result, I'm now at a ridiculously high place with this team, to the point where I was born in 86. So I'm not counting the Showtime teams, but including the three-peat teams and including the back-to-back championships that they won, I think this is the most talented roster I've ever seen.
I actually agree.
Holy crap.
Yeah. It's and what you said at the top of the show about it being a team versus a roster, like the best team versus best roster. We are not the best team I've ever seen as a Laker, because we're so early in the process. But in terms of talent, in terms of skill sets represented, Anthony, did you see that second quarter yesterday?
It was funny. So I know you were watching on the Lakers local feed, right? You were watching Stu and Billy.
Yeah, Spectrum. Mm-hmm.
So I was watching on NBA TV, where they had it presented through Phoenix's play-by-play and color commentator. And they started the game with, like, you know, Monty Williams has told all his guys, if you're going to get at the Lakers, this is a great opportunity to do it, because it's preseason. It's the first time LeBron and Anthony Davis have gotten on a court together. They might still smell like champagne. You know, all of these things. And the Suns did step onto the court and kind of took it to him on that first shift, right? And both those guys, Eddie Johnson, I don't know who does their play-by-play, but those guys are just kind of patting themselves on the back. Oh, look at these guys. They're taking this opportunity. They're really taking it to the Lakers. And then the Lakers started caring. And I think they went on a 44 to 14 run. And those poor commentators were like, well, it's a learning opportunity.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was suffocating defense. It was hyper efficient ball movement on offense. When they play like that, I just don't know if I've ever seen Lakers basketball as dominant as that.
That's how last season ended, man.
Yeah.
Game six, Miami didn't look like they belonged on the court with us. Well, we really lock in and decide we're going to defend. And that's what really stood out to me about that second quarter. And it was something that I was surprised that they put that type of effort into it in the first place.
Yeah.
And it told me kind of about what the team's about. And I think the whole, like, oh, they won the title and they're going to want to, you know, chill and there's not much to play for. It's just not really how a lot of the guys are wired. So I think we've kind of overplayed that angle a little bit. But what I didn't expect to see was LeBron closing out like a freaking madman to the corner and these incredible rotations and like everybody going locked in as hard as they can in a preseason game, even if it's just for a stretch. And when they did that, the run that you talked about, that 45 to whatever it was, that was a hallmark of last year's team. And that's a hallmark of a great team, in that most of the time when we talk about runs, it's like, oh, Lakers call timeout as Phoenix goes on a 12-2 run.
Right.
45 to 13 or whatever.
When you get into the 40s.
It feels like run is not the right word for it anymore. Yeah. It's like a marathon or a 10K or something, it's a longer distance type of thing, right? And like against Miami, a couple times we had one like 75 to 35 run in game one against them. That's more than half of the game. And
you don't see that in the finals, by the way. You never see that in the finals.
No, that's it, right? It's like this Laker team, man, they've got gears, plural gears, that nobody else can get to.
Yeah.
And that was true of last year's team. And I genuinely think they got better. They're different. And I'm still learning like the defensive personality of this team. But the Phoenix just missed the playoffs and they added Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be, I think most people have them in the playoffs this year. And probably not as an eighth seed.
And right? They're the kind of young team that takes the preseason seriously too, by the way.
Sure. I mean, the comments that you said from the announcers are mm-hmm. a perfect example. And the Lakers are a team that everybody takes seriously in terms of when Lakers come into town, you know, yeah. they get everybody's best shot. And but the Lakers can start barely caring for the first 6 minutes. We lost by like 20 in the third quarter when it was our no LeBron or AD lineups against mm-hmm. their starters. Right. So it's not something where it magically happens because you put on the purple and gold armor and all of a sudden, like, we got our butts kicked in that third quarter. But when you've got LeBron and Anthony Davis and everybody else gets kind of slotted into more appropriate or lower positions on that kind of the pecking order, it's like we made a playoff team look like they didn't belong on the court with us. Yeah. And that was true in the finals too. And so, yeah, man, I think we're in the middle of some special time. And then you throw freaking THT, that kid, on top of this and what he could be. You even not even like
seems unfair. From,
yeah, like he could help this year. He's the more I watch him, man, my goodness.
The play, I don't know if you're talking about the same play that I'm thinking about when you're saying LeBron is closing out to the corner like a madman. So he did it a couple times in like the half court set where he's closing out from the basket out and he's closing out, you know, and also contained enough to keep his guy in front of him just in case, you know, he's not overcommitting. He's making a good solid close out there. But there was a play in like semi-transition where, and he probably got away with a bit of a foul, but he was at like half court. The ball got rotated over to the corner, and I might have been Michael Bridges.
I think it was. Mm-hmm. He kind of knocked him down.
He yeah. shoots the ball and he knocked him down. And I was just like, "What the hell? What are you doing?" Because remember, we were all kind of laughing on Twitter at LeBron because Ayton got the ball, got like a rebound, and LeBron started walking back, you know, to just inbound the ball, you know. And, you know, that was the kind of effort I was anticipating in last night's game because it's a preseason game. You know, it's his first one and all that stuff. But to see him chase down a shooter in a game that literally does not matter at all. Yeah, that speaks to the point you're talking about there. And if this is a team that does take these kinds of things seriously, now, whether it's will they float and then throw that punch or, you know, save that punch for as long as possible. And then on some nights, just wait too long to throw it or to flip that switch.
That's going to happen. Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what we're probably going to see. But in those moments where they really do hit that switch and the opposing team just looks like poor Phoenix. I felt bad for them. They so clearly were playing at a pace way too fast. Offensively because of what the Lakers are doing defensively. And, you know, I just now look, it's been 20 years since that three-peat. So maybe I'm misremembering some things, but basically the case that I was making for it is LeBron and AD as a tandem is right there with Kobe and Shaq. Mm-hmm. And then their rotation for guys 8 through 10, 8 through 11, I think is significantly better than the rotation, especially the back end of those rotations with those Lakers teams. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a team that won 3 championships, dude. We aren't even counting the Kobe and Powell years. That's another team that ripped off a couple championships in a row. And we have been blessed enough to, we always say this whenever we talk about Lakers history, how blessed we are. If we're saying how blessed we are as Laker fans, having seen all the great basketball that we have, and we might be watching the best Lakers team of our lifetime, that's unflipping believable. You can't
Bro,
believe
I'm,
it.
I'm old enough to remember 3 separate repeats. Mm-hmm. And this could be a fourth if we do that. And that's insane. I'm 40 years old and this is, yeah, like this would be the 11th title of my lifetime if we were to win
like?
It this
I'm
year.
I'm just kind of curious. Like, well,
he's a fantastic there? GM, smart ass.
Were you there when George Mikan invented the Mikan drill? Like, was that, were you rebounding for him?
No. Yeah, I'm getting to that age, man. I saw like Alonzo Mourning's kid, you know, he signed a camp deal and like freaking, who else was it? Kenyon Martin Jr. prospect. and Ron Harper Jr. is a prospect. And so like those guys, that generation is starting to hit where it's like, I remember when their dads were in college, yeah. Right? Not even in the NBA, when they were like the prospects that we watch now, it would be like, you know, who are the, like Zion, right? Like Zion has a kid and Zion Williamson Jr. is entering the NBA. It's like, oh Lord. Yeah. Yeah. Those names getting to this point are scarring.
Yeah. That was, it's been something to watch. I mean, hell, we've been watching Tim Hardaway Jr., right? He's now been in the league for longer than we want to admit.
Yeah, for sure.
That's where we're at. All right. Well, I can't believe that. See, that was a funny thing, was that I was offering up what I, you know, what probably sounds like a hot take. But really, when you really get down and think about it, not that hot of a take. It's really not.
Dude, we got really good players for the vet minimum. We've got Harrell is way more than an MLE guy. We've got our superstars, our legit superstars that would command more on an open market if there wasn't the max cap. Like we've got, there's at every slotting, we've got, you know, Kuz is on his rookie deal. We complain about him. Dude's making what, $3 million a year?
Yeah.
To be a 6'9" guy who can defend the wing a little bit, who can pass a bit, who can get you 20 on any given night. And like there's Markieff Morris, you know, all of these guys on, you know, really
below market
bargain deal. Yeah. Below market value and all that. So yeah, no, I don't think it's absurd to say.
It's crazy. All right. That's going to do it for this episode and this week's episodes of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Pete, next time, no, that's not true. Well, no, next time you and I talk, we will be previewing the kickoff of the season, the tip off of the season. Yeah,
I can't wait.
So we're there. We made it through this. We are now on the, you know, on the doorstep of what could be a very, very special Lakers season. If you guys want to learn the most you can about it, keep on hitting that subscribe button here. Get your reviews in, your questions in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes, and I'll answer those over the weekend. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's.